Chapter 17, Parapsychology and Pseudoscience. In my Harvard 45th reunion report in 2001, I explained that I hadn't given any money to Harvard since 1966 because Harvard supported scientism, as I called it at the time. Then it occurred to me that I might give somebody the money that I wasn't giving to Harvard, and the name of J.B. Rhine popped into my head. So I looked up J.B. Rhine on the internet and found the Rhine Research Center. I sent a modest donation, along with a copy of my reunion report to the Rhine Research Center, and as soon as the mail was able to get there, I received an enthusiastic phone call from Sally Rhine Feather, Ph.D., daughter of J.B. Rhine, and the executive director of the Rhine Research Center. They appreciated my donation, and they all enjoyed my reunion report because they all had to deal with the prejudices of scientism every day. I sent to Dr. Feather, whom I know as Sally, an accounting of my precognitive dreams to include in the collection of people's psychic experiences that was started by her mother, Dr. Louisa E. Rhine, and we began an email correspondence. In one of my precognitive dreams, I had dreamed that the name Gerald Ford Carter had historical significance before there was any hint that either of these men would become president. My usual way of recording dreams is to write the date followed by dream, and then all the details of the dream that I can remember. But in this case, I printed only the name Gerald Ford Carter in block letters on a piece of paper with no date and no personal details. It was an important dream for me personally, with the Gerald Ford Carter representing the historical period when those two men were going to be president. I hadn't thought about the scientific value of what I had written until 1999, when I was telling a psychology professor that I had precognitive dreams. And he asked me, "Can you prove that?" Then I realized that I had this name printed in number 2 pencil on cheap notebook paper, and if there was some dating method that I could prove when it was written, then yes, I could prove it. I mentioned to Sally that I had this piece of paper, which would be evidence of precognition, if there was some dating method that could establish when it was written. And her reply was a real eye-opener for me. Quote, "No, we do not seek to verify or get proof of the veracity or the paranormal quality of any of our reports, as once was the custom back in the old psychical research days. The early psychical researchers went to enormous effort to obtain highly documented cases, and books are filled with excellent cases that could stand for as much scientific proof as case material could ever be. And you know what? No one in the scientific world seemed to pay much attention. Not that they pay much attention to scientific research results in parapsychology either, I hasten to add. So, this was the kind of complete and total prejudice that parapsychology had to put up with. Refusal to look at the evidence was about as unscientific as a scientific establishment could be, except for depriving people of their livelihood, and I was going to find out that they were doing that too. In 2009, at age 75, I moved to Durham, North Carolina, to work as a volunteer at the Rhine Research Center. I figured I could be useful in my old age doing clerical work, and I became business manager of the Journal of Parapsychology, mostly keeping track of subscribers. I've also received an education in parapsychology, reading a great many books on the subject, taking a course in it, and attending most of the Friday night presentations at the Rhine, a few conferences, meetings of the Psychic Experiences Group, PEG, and the Rhine Book Club. and a couple of spoon-bending parties. I have been witnessing here the cutting edge of our culture. Whether or not the scientific establishment and the universities are aware of it. Some of the most impressive presentations were William Bengston showing how he cured 200 mice of cancer, Daryl Bem demonstrating how things learned in the future can influence our knowledge in the present, Jeanette Nachman on synchronicities, those incredible coincidences which defy all laws of probability, and a report from a hospital in India where they pray for their patients with statistically significant results. But my subject here is not the wonderful things that are being discovered in parapsychology, but dirty science. That's why I was attracted to the Rhine Research Center in the first place, to oppose the bias and prejudice directed at parapsychology. And that's what I found myself doing when I got here. In one of my first encounters at the Rhine, a man came in with his son, whose middle school science project had received a failing grade because the subject he had chosen was parapsychology. This seems cruel, but I suppose it is all part of the process of learning the politics of physicalism, because a few years later, I met a person with a PhD degree who had been fired from a major university because of too much interest in parapsychology. Through my various encounters with people at the Rhine, I learned that dirty science was more than just ridicule, but had the power to deny people publication, funding, and employment. And then they turn around and say that the reason for the declining number of papers on parapsychology in mainstream science journals is because of a declining interest, because the subject is bogus. Knowing my interest in dirty science, Sally asked me if I could try to persuade Wikipedia not to label parapsychology a pseudoscience. She said that Nancy Zingroni, PhD, former president of the Parapsychology Association, had tried that with no success. Well, if the person with the highest status in the field of parapsychology had failed, there didn't seem to be much hope for me, but this is what I had come here to do, and I was willing to try. According to Wikipedia, parapsychology had been labeled a pseudoscience because no evidence had been found to substantiate the existence of psychic phenomena in more than a century of research. That claim, of course, was absurd. I had access to literally a ton of evidence to refute it in the Alex Tanis Library at the Rhine Research Center. Where did anybody get the idea that there was no evidence? I quickly discovered the reference to the National Academy of Sciences. I want to quote it again and make a spectacle out of it because it is so precious. While there is some debate over whether anybody actually asserted that nothing heavier than air could fly or that the patent office should be closed because nothing new could possibly be invented, this assertion is fully documented. And, as I have already said, and I'm happy to repeat, will be recorded in the annals of folly forever. This is a quote from Druckmann and Swetz, 1998. The committee finds no scientific justification from research conducted over a period of 130 years for the existence of parapsychological phenomena. I found the report on abebooks.com, saw that only one chapter in five references were devoted to parapsychology, and saw the bias with which it was written, picking on the weakest studies and representing them in the least favorable light, with smear tactics, such as allegorical allegations of dirty test tubes, and ridicule for things like spoon bending. It was not at all scientific. It was one of those publications that should be assigned to college freshman classes in critical thinking as an example of illegitimate arguments. My strategy then, since Wikipedia appeared to be intractable, was to approach the National Academy of Sciences and let them know that this highly biased, highly inaccurate, and actually sleazy report had been issued in their name. At Harvard, we had learned as a part of the in-group attitude not to be impressed by anybody. But as I read the biographical information of the counselors, I was deeply impressed and truly in awe of the stature of these people. There was a huge contrast between the highest quality of science that these people represented and the inaccurate and irresponsible report that now carried their name and their reputations with it. So it was with the highest possible respect that I decided to write a letter to the president of the National Academy of Sciences to make him aware of the travesty that had been issued in the name of his organization. I turned for help in composing this letter to Sally Rhine Feather, PhD, executive director of the Rhine Research Center, and John Palmer, PhD, editor of the Journal of Parapsychology. Both of them were very skeptical that my letter would accomplish anything based upon years of experience in dealing with the prejudice, but they both helped me enormously in composing the letter. Sally advised me not to use words like sham and farce, and actually supplied some of the wording for the letter. Her style was much more genteel than mine, and more appropriate for approaching a person with as high a status as the president of the National Academy of Sciences. John Palmer informed me that he, along with Charles Honorton and Jessica Utz, three people expert in the field of parapsychology, had already published a rebuttal to the report of the National Academy of Sciences. He let me make a copy of his copy because the publication was not easily available. One of the many things the rebuttal pointed out was that the two principal evaluators of parapsychology, Ray Hyman and James Alcott, were known zealots against parapsychology, and there was nobody on the committee expert in parapsychology to counterbalance their efforts and perhaps educate the committee on the subject. Jessica Utz, PhD, chair of the Statistics Department at the University of California, Irvine, backed up my letter with a letter of her own on a more professional and expert level. I want to reprint here my letter to Ralph J. Cicerone, PhD, president of the National Academy of Sciences, because it is the best statement I could possibly make, and it represents itself exactly. March 14th, 2011. Ralph J. Cicerone, president, National Academy of Sciences, 505th Street Northwest, Washington, D.C., 20001. Dear Dr. Cicerone, I have received no reply to my letter of January 21st, 2011, from anybody in your organization, so I am sending the whole letter again. When I look up parapsychology on Wikipedia, I find that parapsychology has been labeled a pseudoscience as follows. This is a quote. External scientists and skeptics have criticized the discipline as being a pseudoscience because, as they see it, parapsychologists continue investigation despite not having demonstrated conclusive evidence of psychic abilities in more than a century of research. And when I look for the source of that claim, I find the following statement. Quote, in 1988, the U.S. National Academy of Sciences published a report on the subject that concluded that the committee finds no scientific justification from research conducted over a period of 130 years for the existence of parapsychological phenomena. When I actually read the report, I found that the committee did not look at the research of 130 years. They cite only 5 references to the Journal of Parapsychology, all from the 1980s, and only 2 on actual research. 1 reference from the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research, and no references at all from the peer-reviewed British and European journals. They make no mention of the name J.B. Rhine, let alone refute his research or refute the fact that his findings have been replicated by a great many independent laboratories in many countries throughout the world. And the figure of 130 years seems to have been plucked out of thin air. Any statement I make at this point would be an understatement. The scope of the study was insufficient to support its sweeping conclusion. In order to demonstrate with a 95% probability that not a single experiment yielded evidence of parapsychological phenomena, the committee would have had to review 95% of the experiments in the field and refute each of them accurately. Obviously, the scope of the study fell far short of that. It was the first of the criticisms at the time in a rebuttal paper by 3 of the most highly qualified people in the field of parapsychology. They made many more valid criticisms, in which, in my opinion, seemed to turn the issue into a debate. Some of these points may be debatable, but the mathematics of science is generally accepted. A certain sample size is necessary to claim certain results, and this study had only a tiny fraction of the sample size necessary to support its sweeping claims. I believe that most people at the time accepted the conclusion based on the high status and reputation of the National Academy of Sciences, and never bothered to read the report. Some writers have had to create the necessary fiction, saying that the committee did do the complete study, just to make the finding plausible to a general audience. Robert L. Park, in Voodoo Science, said, quote, "In 1987, at the request of the U.S. Army, the National Academy of Sciences undertook a complete review of all the literature on parapsychology as a part of a larger study of unconventional methods of enhancing human performance." And from skepticfiles.org, I quote, "In arriving at that conclusion, the panel reviewed research literature dating back 130 years. End quote. Obviously, that report, using the prestigious name of the National Academy of Sciences, had done enormous damage to the field of parapsychology in the United States. Parapsychology is alive and well in the United Kingdom. What may not be so obvious is the damage this report can potentially do to the reputation of the National Academy of Sciences, that such a blatantly invalid report can pass the scrutiny of the scientifically trained leadership of the National Academy of Sciences. Since this didn't happen on your watch, you aren't responsible for it. But it would be to your great credit if you would look into this matter with a view to correcting the serious omissions and premature conclusions. I am trying to approach you here in a friendly way, hoping that you will recognize that it would be to the benefit of both the National Academy of Sciences and parapsychology to reverse this judgment. I am not asking you to go out on a limb and endorse parapsychology. I am only asking you as a scientist to recognize that the committee's sweeping conclusion was invalid, and to issue a public statement to that effect. Sincerely, Robert S. Gebelein." Copies went to Sally Rhine-Feather, director of the Rhine Research Center, John Palmer, editor of the Journal of Parapsychology, the Parapsychological Association Incorporated. The publications I referenced in the letter were, number one, Enhancing Human Performance, Issues, Theories, and Techniques by Druckmann and Swetz, published in 1988. Two, An Assessment of the Evidence for Psychic Functioning from the Journal of Scientific Exploration by Jessica Utz in 1996. Number three, Extrasensory Perception, Research Findings in Advances in Parapsychological Research and Extrasensory Perception by John Palmer, 1978. Number four, Handbook of Parapsychology by B.B. Woolman in 1977. Number four, Seven Evidential Experiments from the Zetetic Scholar by John Beloff in 1980. Number six, Reply to the National Research Council Study on Parapsychology by John Palmer, Honorton, Utz, 1988. Number seven, Voodoo Science, The Road from Foolishness to Fraud by Robert L. Parks in the year 2000. I was delighted even to receive a reply from Dr. Ciceroni. It was a very good letter, worthy of a person of his stature. In it, he offered to find a knowledgeable, disinterested person to investigate the subject. I couldn't help thinking that that might be as difficult as finding a disinterested person on the subject of psychedelic drugs or the presidential election of 2000. I didn't hear any more from Dr. Ciceroni or the National Academy of Sciences. But a couple of years later, I looked up parapsychology on Wikipedia, and it seemed that the reference to the National Academy of Sciences had been deleted. When I looked it up again, last modified on the 15th of January, 2016, I could see that the quote had been moved down from its prominent place to page 15, and the reference number had been moved down from 20 to 22 to 149. I speculated that the National Academy of Sciences might have applied some pressure on Wikipedia to drop the reference, but Dr. Ciceroni informed me that this didn't happen. So, by some miracle, Wikipedia chose to move this reference, really their main support for their definition of pseudoscience, to a less conspicuous place. As of January the 15th, 2016, the definition of parapsychology in Wikipedia began with the words, "Parapsychology is a pseudoscience," whereas previously that assertion wasn't made until the second or third sentence. And there was still the statement in the second paragraph, "Parapsychology has been criticized for continuing investigation, despite being unable to provide convincing evidence for the existence of any psychic phenomena after more than a century of research." But these references had changed to Hyman, Flew, Cordon, Bunge, Blitz, and Stein, persons whose status was not comparable to the National Academy of Sciences. I was wondering why they would give up such an authoritative reference, but I was thankful for it. So some small progress had been made. I learned when I was dealing with boulders on my New Hampshire property that if I could move it a quarter of an inch, I could move it across the yard. I hope that the same principle will apply here. Didn't the editors of Wikipedia know that parapsychology had been recognized as a science by the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS, since 1969? Yes, they did, but they presented it in an unfavorable way, with no acknowledgement that the members of that organization, all scientists, voted by a 5-to-1 majority to recognize parapsychology as a science, but emphasizing instead the one zealot who called it a pseudoscience. quote from Wikipedia, the 15th of January, 2016. In 1969, under the direction of anthropologist Margaret Mead, the Parapsychological Association became affiliated with the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS, the largest general scientific society in the world. In 1979, physicist John A. Wheeler said that parapsychology is pseudoscientific, and that the affiliation of the PA to the AAAS needed to be reconsidered. His challenge to parapsychology's AAAS affiliation was unsuccessful. This has been the general tone of Wikipedia on parapsychology: to minimize, discredit, slant, smear, insinuate, and accuse of incompetence, cheating, or fraud. In a word, to bias. A large proportion of their references have come from people known to have a bias, such as James Randi, Ray Hyman, James Alcock, Paul Kurtz, The Skeptical Inquirer, CSICOP, and Prometheus Books, in titles such as Voodoo Science, that have advertised a bias. Over and over again, these people and other detractors of parapsychology have described themselves as skeptics to convey the impression that they have no set opinion and are open to scientific evidence, when actually they are pseudo-skeptics, meaning that they do have a set opinion and are closed to scientific evidence to the contrary, and will find any way they can to explain away the evidence. I know that psychic and spiritual phenomena exist because I have experienced them for myself. I don't need any scientific proof. And then there are people who know for certain that psychic and spiritual phenomena do not exist because they have not experienced these things themselves and will not accept any scientific proof. What's wrong with that? I have learned from several sources that Wikipedia is inaccurate. From John Kruth, the present executive director of the Rhine Research Center, I learned that there are people called guerrilla skeptics who are actively making Wikipedia inaccurate by imposing their ideological bias upon it. I tried to look up guerrilla skeptics and guerrilla skepticism on Wikipedia and found that these pages did not exist. I had to look up Susan Gerbic, the founder and organizer, to find the section Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia. Susan Gerbic, it said, grew up as a Southern Baptist, and she said, "I never heard the word atheist until I was in my late teens." It didn't say that she swung from one extreme to the other, this had to be inferred, when she says she found other so-called skeptics and was educated by the James Randi Educational Foundation. Yes, James Randi has actually established an educational foundation where he has offered instruction in critical thinking. His educational foundation had 68,853 likes on Facebook when I looked it up. Judging from his book Flim Flam, I can imagine what kind of critical thinking is being offered. And I can imagine what Susan Gerbic has been doing on Wikipedia to improve content. I have to talk about Wikipedia in the past tense because content keeps changing. As of August 29th, 2018, they no longer start off with parapsychology is a pseudoscience, but the general derogatory tone continued. They still seem to favor people with a known bias, and their references to the National Academy of Sciences were numbers 96 and 159. Some extremists, in a supreme effort to discredit parapsychology, even changed the math to deny the reality of Daryl Bem's findings in his paper, Feeling the Future. In the fall of 2010, when Daryl Bem came to the Rhine, he did a little experiment with his audience. First, he flashed on the screen a series of words, 24 in all. Then he asked us to write down all we could remember. I didn't remember very many, only 9 out of 24. As a child, I did much better at memory games, but I already knew that my short-term memory was failing in my old age. After we had written down all the words we could remember, Bem gave us instruction on half of them. He divided them up into 4 categories: clothes, fruits, occupations, and animals, with 3 words in each category. Then he asked us to check off these words on our lists and count the number of words we had checked off and compare that to the number of words that we hadn't checked off that we hadn't had instruction on. To my amazement, I remembered 7 of the words we had received future instruction on, compared to only 2 that we hadn't had instruction on. He asked how many of us remembered more of the words that we had future instruction on, and most of the people in the audience raised their hands. In other words, we had the test first and the instruction afterwards, just the reverse of the way it usually happens. That's basically what his paper, Feeling the Future, was about. There were 2 experiments with future instruction like the one we had experienced, but with 48 words. Retroactive facilitation of recall. There were also 2 experiments on precognitive approach avoidance. The first, detection of erotic stimuli, and the second, avoidance of negative stimuli. 2 experiments on retroactive priming, 2 experiments on retroactive habituation, and 1 experiment on retroactive induction of boredom, for a total of 9 experiments in all. He claimed that 8 out of the 9 experiments were statistically significant in favor of being able to perceive the future. When you combine them all, the result is impressive. He calculated the probability as P equaling 1.34 times to the negative 11th power, about 1 in 75 billion, that this all happened by chance. All these experiments were run by computer. The experimenter left the room and the participants interacted solely with the computer. The software is available both for Windows and Macintosh, so that these experiments can be precisely replicated. When Bem returned to the Rhine a couple of years later, he said that the experiments had been replicated by 80 independent observers in 30 countries. This is all a gross oversimplification of a paper which, in my printout, is 61 pages long, double-spaced. In it, Bem explains how he ruled out the possibility of clairvoyance. If the random number table is set, or psychokinesis, if random numbers are generated dynamically by running experiments both ways with no bias shown either way. On the erotic pictures, he allows people 4 sexual preferences. In some experiments, he separates people into extroverts and introverts, and in the second habituation experiment, he separates out erotic stimulus seekers to see if these subgroups would differ in their psi performances. They do. He has taken many factors into consideration in what seems to me to be a very complicated set of experiments. One factor he mentions at the end is the experiment effect. Even though all the interactions during the experiment is with the computer, any indication beforehand that the experimenter wants negative results can bias the experiment and make it come out negatively or with chance results. On the other hand, something the pseudo-skeptics don't seem to understand and needs to be pointed out is that even the most positive bias exerted by an experimenter who is a believer is not going to give the participant the ability to perceive the future if that ability does not exist. Experimenter Psi, of course, can create positive results, but then that would demonstrate that psychic abilities are real. Some of the criticism against Behm's paper was predictable. James Alcock, a known zealot against parapsychology, published a critical piece in Skeptical Inquirer, a magazine with a known bias against anything psychic or spiritual. As I have said before, I don't see Skeptical Inquirer, or CSICOP, now CSI, or Prometheus Books as either scholarly or scientific. They are dedicated to supporting a belief system, physicalism. In my opinion, they are psychologically interlocked in a struggle with the religious right on that level. As if the bias represented by Alcock in the Skeptical Inquirer wasn't known immediately, he advertises it right at the beginning by saying parapsychology has long struggled unsuccessfully for acceptance in the halls of science. I think I have to inform James Alcock, because the rest of us know that parapsychology was accepted in the halls of science in 1969, when the Parapsychological Association, PA, was accepted into the American Association for the Advancement of Sciences, AAAS, by a 5-to-1 vote. I'm sorry I have to keep repeating this over and over, but people keep denying it over and over. The majority of scientists accepted the reality of psychic phenomena in 1994, according to a survey by Behm and Onnerton. Only a minority of individuals, such as Alcock, refused to accept it. Alcock then goes on to dismiss all of J.B. Rhine's work because of methodological problems, and Helmut Schmidt's work because of methodological errors and methodological flaws. The problem here is that he doesn't identify what any of these errors are. This is a common tactic of people in the put-down business. They get to implant the suggestion in people's minds that there are errors, and with it, the insinuation that these errors invalidate the entire work, without actually specifying any errors. If Alcock is trying to do science here, he is the one with the methodological errors. Alcock's main complaint about Behm's experiments is that they are confusing. Yes, they're complicated, but in my opinion, Alcock is the one creating the confusion. He uses words like messy and muddle to communicate his bias, all of which we already know. Alcock makes a factual error in describing the first experiment in which Behm switches from 2 groups of 18 pictures to 3 groups of 12 pictures. He doesn't seem to register that the problem for the participant is always to guess which of 2 curtains the picture is behind, and not which group the picture belongs to. Alcock jumps on Behm's 2-question tests as extroversion, introversion, and erotic stimulus seekers, but actually, these separations have no bearing on the main finding of the study, only on which kinds of people do better at feeling the future. And so on. Alcock goes on and on, jumping on every irregularity with appropriate smear tactics to make Behm look bad. But we know Alcock's bias, and we know that this is what he is going to do. And it gets boring. Not so boring is the paper by Eric John Wagenmaker, Rudd Wetzels, Denny Boersboom, and Hans van der Maas, Why Psychologists Must Change the Way They Analyze Their Data, The Case of Psi, They are so certain that precognition does not exist that they are saying we have to change the math so that experiments with psi produce results consistent with their belief. The math that they want to change is almost as established as the scientific establishment itself. The 5% probability level for statistical significance has become part of the rules of science since first proposed by Ronald Fisher in 1925. This is an arbitrary cutoff point, but if there is any doubt that the one chance in 20 might really have been arrived at by chance, you can repeat the same experiment, and if you get the same results again, then the probability is 1 in 400 that they both happened by chance. Or you can run 9 experiments, as Daryl Bem did, and arrive at a probability of 1.34 in 100 billion that it all happened by chance. The binomial distribution that determines these probabilities goes back even farther than that to Swiss mathematician Jacob Bernoulli, who died in 1705. Mathematics is the nearest thing to absolute truth that we have. Changing the math would be like changing the rules of science itself. Just because one scientific finding didn't agree with somebody's belief system. And if the math was changed, it would affect retroactively every scientific finding that was ever determined using the old math. It is a testimony to the quality and the paradigm-changing nature of Bem's experiment that these people want to change the math in order to refute it. Wagenmakers et al. Interpret Bem's result using Bayesian statistics instead of the established statistical methods. In Bayesian statistics, you have to assign probability figures to the false positive and the true positive. They are so certain of their belief that they assign a probability of 10 to the negative 20th power to the possibility that psi phenomena are real. This is an amazing degree of certainty. My usual illustration of certainty is the probability that the sun will rise tomorrow. But their figure of 10 to the negative 20th power is the equivalent of the certainty that the sun will rise every day for about 274 quadrillion years, or about 20 million times the age of the universe. Then, given this near-zero probability figure for the true positive, Wagenmakers et al. Are able to calculate a near-zero result for the reality of psi. In other words, in Bayesian analysis, they are able to plug their bias into the equation, and out the other end comes an answer that reflects their bias. What's wrong with that? The old-fashioned statistics is simply a mathematical calculation. As I said, the closest thing to absolute truth that we have. It simply tells us where the results lie on a probability curve without somebody's opinion being able to bias the answer. Therefore, I would call it more scientific. While the arrogance of Wagenmakers et al. Is novel and entertaining, on the serious side, it illustrates the extreme bias that is operating here. Any physical explanation is preferable to any explanation that doesn't conform to known physical laws. To enforce that rule, extreme ridicule is applied. If the extreme ridicule doesn't force people to conform, then they are deprived of their entire professional and social standing. None of this has anything to do with science. It is strictly social manipulation and domination. Wagenmakers et al. Have added a new wrinkle by trying to support this extreme bias with mathematics. They don't do as much of the boring stuff as James Alcock. Their argument at least gives the appearance of being scientific, although they do mention that nobody has ever collected James Randi's $1 million. Their method seems to be the quick fiction, grasping at straws, looking for any legitimate argument that might discredit BEM's findings. They seem particularly concerned that if people were psychic, casinos might go bankrupt. Actually, I have heard that casinos take care of themselves, identifying the people who win too much too often and inviting them not to come back. But if you look at the people who are very rich or very lucky or more successful than you are, for no apparent reason, how many of them have psychic abilities? They aren't saying. Daryl Bem has said, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. This is one point upon which he and Wagenmakers et al. Seem to agree. But I agree with John Palmer that this exerts a bias. The same rules of science should apply to all claims, whether or not somebody thinks they are extraordinary. Because if you think a claim is extraordinary, that implies that you think you know something about the phenomenon in question that makes it extraordinary. And that would be a bias. Wagenmakers et al. Do make a valid point, though, when they say that the evidence would have to be much stronger to convince them of the reality of psi phenomena. But this is a psychological or sociological problem of overcoming the bias of a major subculture, and not simply a problem of demonstrating the reality of psi phenomena. The reality of psi phenomena has been demonstrated over and over again for the impartial observer by J.B. Rhine and many others. If 90% of Americans have had a psychic experience, then why is there such an extraordinary claim? I didn't hear much about psychic abilities until I became aware that I was having precognitive dreams myself and began telling people about it. Then people gushed forth with their own psychic experiences. It seemed that everybody had a story to tell. Why were they reluctant to tell their stories unless they knew they were talking to a true believer? The need for secrecy goes back a long way. The Catholic Church and Protestant churches alike burned people at the stake for witchcraft. Having psychic abilities was considered the work of the devil, or witchcraft. Even today, religious people shy away from psychic abilities because they believe these things are the work of the devil. So there has been a long history of religious persecution causing people to keep these things secret, even before the scientific era. And then when science became dominant, people who had psychic abilities were lumped in with people who heard voices or had hallucinations. They were considered to have a mental disorder. So, of course, people have been secretive about it. These claims are only extraordinary because they have been suppressed for so long by authorities who have the power to put you to death, condemn you as possessed by the devil, or commit you to an insane asylum. And now, psychic experiences are considered extraordinary only because the scientific establishment keeps rejecting the ordinary evidence presented thousands of times, demanding extraordinary evidence. This rejection of evidence is in itself evidence of something. There is a force beyond chance operating here. That force is extreme bias, which actually destroys science and makes scientists lose all credibility in this area. That bias is taught to the 2 million students who graduate from college every year in America. I was interested to read in Minefield the Bulletin of the Parapsychological Association, a paper by Chris A. Rowe entitled, "What Are Psychology Students Told About the Current State of Parapsychology?" It confirms what I observed in the one college textbook and extends to other college textbooks. Of the 8 introductory psychology textbooks that Rowe found in his university, UK, library, 4 of them said nothing about parapsychology, and the other 4 had the same kind of disparaging, unscientific remarks and insinuations about it that I have observed using words like fraudulent, threats to the validity of research, vulnerable people being taken advantage of, more troubling and questionable use of statistical analysis, and cite as their authorities known sources of bias, Skeptical Inquirer, CSICOP, James Randi, and James Alcock. Rowe also refers to a study done from 1990 to 2002 by James McLennan, Miguel Roig, Matthew D. Smith, and Gillian Ferrier, analyzing 64 textbooks published in the 1980s, 52 textbooks published in the 1990s, and 57 textbooks published in the fall of 2002. These authors observed that the 2002 texts tended to portray a more skeptical tone. Their analysis of the 2002 texts revealed, quote, authors reviewing experimental evidence supporting of belief in psi, Bem, Onerton, McConnell, and Rhine, were cited collectively 39 times. Authors skeptical of these claims, Milton, Wiseman, Hyman, Randi, Blackmore, Hansel, Alcock, Marx, Swets, and Bjork, were cited collectively 94 times. Skeptical positions received roughly 2 times more coverage than parapsychological claims. Another quote, authors publishing in the popular non-referred Skeptical Inquirer were cited 58 times, whereas those publishing in the Journal of Parapsychology were cited only 22 times. This is in textbooks. I can't think of anything else I have in a psychology textbook, except for attempts to dismiss Freud and Jung, that isn't based 100% on scholarly references. Also, McLennan et al. Uses words that suggest that litigation might be possible against some of these textbook publishers. They use the word misrepresentation, also Alcock's false and misleading statements, and also critics' accusations of fraud by experimenters. I am thinking that lawyers might take an interest in this. Also, James Randi should not be the judge of whether his $1 million offer should be paid. It should be taken to an impartial court of law to decide. McLennan et al. Conclude by saying, quote, science is a political and rhetorical process. Although parapsychologists may feel that the evidence they generate supports belief in psi, political and rhetorical factors affect the treatment that this evidence receives. Yes, I agree that political and rhetorical factors influence the way the evidence is treated, but I don't agree that politics and rhetoric are a part of science. Science uses accurate observation along with accurate logic and accurate mathematics to explain those observations. Politics and rhetoric are part of the corruption of science, and if they are allowed to continue to dominate, they will reduce the accuracy of whatever calls itself science, back down to the level of knowledge of the Stone Age chieftain who rules everybody with a club. I think the concluding statement of Nancy Zingaroni in her presidential address to the Parapsychological Association in 2001 is more accurate and more appropriate. Quote, if we add an understanding of the social, political, and rhetorical surround to the methodological and analytical tools we already have on our research bench, progress in parapsychology is inevitable. The social, political, and rhetorical surround is not science. If it poses as science, it is what I call dirty science. It is pseudoscience. For the sake of the 2 million Americans who graduate from our colleges and universities each year, let's get pseudoscience out of the workplace.